Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For decades, most people did not begrudge public employees a decent pension. After all, most people had one. Now, in the private sector, they don't. Public sector still does, plus early retirement ages, health coverage. The bill for all that is croaking state and local budgets around the country. A lot of taxpayers are getting angry and envious. Envious, this hour on Point, pension envy, struggling taxpayers footing the bill for public employees. Joining me first today from Sacramento, California, is Mark Paul, senior scholar at the New America Foundation. His op-ed essay, Pension Envy in California, co-authored with Michael Weinberg, was published last week in the Los Angeles Times. Mark Paul, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Take us to California first. It's not the only state or city, locale, that is struggling with this. But what has got pension envy keyed up so high in your state, Mark?
It's the combination of probably the most generous public pensions in the country here in California. And as you said, at the same time, a collapse of the private retirement system. The financial crisis has whacked the 401k plans on which most people who have any workplace retirement savings in the private sector have come to depend upon. And so we have in California is the particular case, but is true to some extent across the country, that we have what we call private affluence and public affluence and private squalor in retirement savings.
That's just turning, what, a half century ago or so. John Kenneth Galbraith had that phrase, but with the opposite formulation. It's talking
exactly
about this country living in a time of private affluence and public squalor. You've turned that around. What do you mean by that? Public affluence, private squalor?
Well, the in the public sector, most the employees have retirement savings plans, and most of those plans are traditional pensions, what the experts called defined benefit plans, the ones that you work through your career and then you end up with in retirement, mm-hmm. with a fixed a monthly payment. And in the private sector, as you said, many workers used to have those plans starting with the growth of the great industrial firms in the middle of the 20th century. It was typical if you worked for a big company, and mm-hmm. it still is for the biggest companies, for workers to have one of those traditional pension plans. But increasingly, about 70% of people who have retirement plans now are mostly the 401k plans, where what I call the do-it-yourself retirement system, where your employer makes a contribution to your account, and then you're responsible for investing it and hoping that you don't outlive the money that you've saved.
And is that what's driving the tension right now? Because those 401ks, people were having trouble putting enough in there already, but then the market tanked, and a lot of people in the private sector lost a whole lot of what they had saved, while the public pension guarantees, as required by law, go on.
That's right, and that's a big part of the growing envy that it drives this issue. And of course, part of it is, in some places like California, the pensions are actually, you know, very generous. In fact, larger in many cases, for instance, for public safety employees, than actually needed to provide secure retirement to replace their income. Other places in the country, the pensions are more reasonable. There's great variation across the country, but there's not much variation in the situation that private sector workers are in. Only about half of private sector workers in America actually even have access to a retirement plan at work. And then on top of it, those who do are increasingly the 401k style plans, which leave all the investment risk to them. And of course, many people in the financial crisis, as the for older workers who were approaching retirement have found themselves unable actually to retire because their what they thought was adequate savings has evaporated in the market crash.
Now, you've come out with this big report, Public Affluence, Private Squalor, was the headline you put on it. Carolyn Lockhead in the San Francisco Chronicle said, what's going on here? She said, we're used to the Reason Foundation or the Cato Institute conservative groups, you know, targeting public pensions. But the New America Foundation is more center-left. So what are you as, center-left, progressive, doing targeting this?
Well, it's because it is hitting the budgets of states and cities all across the country, but particularly here in California, the large costs. And so pension costs are threatening to drive out investments in other public goods, including education, you know, healthcare and law enforcement. And so this increasingly there's interest in this issue. Both there's been a long time ideological interest on the right in partly because the pensions are sponsored in many places by public employee unions who are at odds with conservatives on other issues. But for instance, in San Francisco, the public defender Jeff Adache, who is a very liberal Democrat, has filed an initiative for pension reform in the city of San Francisco, arguing precisely that the pensions are too large and that they are competing with other public goods in that city.
And then there was this this simply outrageous case in Bell, California, poor, largely Hispanic, near Los Angeles, where the top officials were paying themselves, you know, up toward $800,000 a year, with pensions not so far behind that. People just went berserk over that.
They did, and they should have. I mean, it was a terrible abuse, but it is the only the tip of the iceberg. You know, $800,000 salaries for a city manager are not usual, but there are high-priced, particularly in local governments in California, city managers and police chiefs, et cetera, who are fire chiefs who are retiring with pensions of $100,000 to $200,000 to $300,000, depending on what their previous salaries were. So this is the Bell example has received a lot of attention, but it is sort of an outlier. But nevertheless, it is a symptom of a larger problem.
It's not just in California. Around the country, lots of states are wrestling with not nearly enough money in the kitty to pay for promised pensions, really struggling with that. Here just last week on ABC's This Week was New Jersey Governor Chris Christie explaining why he didn't include billions in pension obligations in New Jersey's yearly budget this year.
I wasn't going to put $3 billion into a failing pension system. We need pension reform. I passed some already for new hires in March. And now this fall, we're going to go after current employees and pension reform and health benefit reform because we're going broke.
We're going broke, says the governor of New Jersey, in the blue-collar Los Angeles suburb of Bell. Outrage, not at the governor level, but right down in the streets over those bloated salaries. A city manager made nearly $800,000. Listen to this.
We all poor people pay our taxes, and these people are ripping us off.
So what do you think? You said jail time?
Jail time, yeah. Let's put them in jail.
They're yelling jail time in the streets there in Bell. California Attorney General Jerry Brown on Monday, he's running for governor there, said in a press conference, he would subpoena hundreds of records from Bell, California, where city employees had those big salaries and pensions.
We want to see their emails. We want to see the ordinances, the resolutions, the minutes of meetings. We want to find out exactly how they ever came to the conclusion that city officials should make so much money.
And California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, looking at the big picture, saying they've got to have reform on public pensions.
I appreciate very much of what state employees are doing. They're hardworking people. But this is just a financial crisis that we got into because of mistakes that were made and because we have not reformed pension. And this is why I urge everyone in the legislature to reform the pension and to solve the budget problem.
Mark Paul is with us from Sacramento, California. He's looking at the problem. He's saying, look, don't give in to pension envy. Let's try and fix this for everybody, not downgrade, but try and upgrade, try and make it more solid. But it's a big fiscal challenge. Joining us right now from Washington, D.C. is Todd Zewicki, professor at George Mason University School of Law, co-editor of the Supreme Court Economic Review. Todd Zewicki, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here.
What do you see going on nationally as, you know, taxpayers look out on public pensions?
Well, I think what taxpayers are doing is waking up to an outrage, really, that's been going on for a very long time. And what we're seeing is literally every day there's two, three, four more stories of pension fund outrages, people gaming the system and that sort of thing. And I think what we're really starting to see now in the current budgetary and economic environment is that we're finally hitting the wall. 20 years ago, the idea, or 25 years ago, that General Motors would go belly up and have to file bankruptcy seemed laughable to people. But basically what they ended up doing was killing their own golden goose with falling revenue, borrowing money to cover operating expenses, and just being crushed by these huge pension obligations and that sort of thing. And what I think we're seeing on a nationwide level now is states are basically General Motors at this point. They've got limited sources of revenue, and they've got massive, massive, massive unfunded pension liabilities. And the problem they're running into is that they've got a lot less flexibility and a lot fewer tools to be able to deal with those problems than even General Motors has.
But these are the deals that were made with public employees who worked in good faith for entire careers as defined right there in contracts. I mean, there's no going back on these pensions, is there?
Well, I think at least if you look at Bell California, I think there's some question as to whether or not any reasonable person would call that a good faith agreement that they made with those people. But certainly that's right, that there were promises made. But they were promises made irresponsibly, and I think we're starting to see the price tag come due. And
Todd Zwicky, stand by right there if you would. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Here's a satire from SNL, satirizing the disparity between benefits for public and private workers in an imagined awards ceremony for Public Employee of the Year. Here's the MC.
In these times of anti-tax hysteria and threats of government budget cuts, it's important to remember that people with government jobs are just like workers everywhere, except for the lifetime job security, guaranteed annual raises, early retirement on generous pensions, and full medical coverage with no deductibles, office visit fees, or co-payments.
They're laughing. A lot of people may not be, and it's a problem needing solving all over. You can join the conversation this hour. Are you seeing private retirements fall apart as public pensions stay right up there? How will we pay for all the public pension obligations? Can we have a society where public employees retire fine while taxpayers scramble to survive? And what about the promises here, the legal obligations? They've been made. People have worked. Are we going to downgrade everybody, upgrade everybody? What's the answer? 800-423-8255 is our number, 800-423-TALK. Mark Paul joins us today from Sacramento, California. He's co-author of a recent study called Public Affluence, Private Squalor, California's Dual Pension Crisis. He works at the New America Foundation, kind of center-left outfit. There is op-ed in the Los Angeles Times. It's headlined Pension Envy in California. Todd Zwicky is with us from George Mason University School of Law. And with me right now in the studio is Alicia Munell, director of the Center for Retirement Research, professor of management sciences at Boston College. 2009, she was appointed by Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick to chair a special committee to study the state's public retirement system. Alicia Munell, very good to have you here.
Hi, Tom. It's nice to be here.
What do you see going on here? We've got big obligations. Some states are on top of them. They've put away the money they need to pay for this. A lot of states have not, are way short and facing a kind of crisis. And then there's this, you know, taxpayers looking into the public arena without much in their own retirement pocket and saying, what goes?
I certainly agree with everything Mark Paul said about the deficiencies in the private sector. 401k plans are the assets in those plans are going to be inadequate for retirement. On the public side, I understand the warts in the system. I've seen the scandals. And California is definitely a unique situation where the most generous pensions in the state. But I actually think that the defined benefit system for public employees is a bright spark in this retirement income system, something we should.
A bright spot, nationally.
Bright spot.
Because what? Because everybody ought to have it, or you wish that was the model, but they don't.
It is a good model. Defined benefit plans are a good way to provide retirement security. And just two facts, okay? Mm-hmm. Because the average pension benefit for public employees across the country is $20,000. So we're not talking millions here. We're talking $20,000 on average.
And now, some of those public employees don't get Social Security because they don't pay into Social Security.
Exactly. In Massachusetts, we don't have any Social Security, so what they get from the public sector, from the public plan, is all they get. And in Massachusetts, it's sort of teachers get about $35,000 and non-teachers get about $25,000. Those aren't enormous numbers. Yet scandals do exist, outrages exist. The plans are poorly designed in the sense that we have such early retirement dates.
Like what? Ages, you mean?
In
like?
California, it's at 55, but even in other places, it's just 60. Whereas under Social Security, you can't even get a benefit till 62, and you don't get your full benefit until 66. So that should be changed. But can I just do 1 minute of brief history? Because here's what happened in these plans. These plans were put in place in the first half of the 20th century. And basically, there were very few people getting benefits, and no attention was paid to funding at all until the 1970s, when they passed ERISA for private plans, which is the law that regulates private
funds. The beginning of the 401k move.
Well, no, it's actually the beginning of just regulating private plans.
Okay.
They looked at public plans and decided that they would not, for constitutional reasons, regulate public plans, but they did a study of public plans at that time, and they said they're really in terrible condition. There's no funding going on. Nobody's looking. So in the 80s, people began to look seriously at public plans and say, we really should get these things funded. Some states and localities started funding. In the mid-1990s, the accounting organization that regulates public plans, GASB, Government Accounting Standards Board, set standards. And by the year 2000, in the aggregate, these plans were fully funded.
But we are so far from that now, after everything we've seen in the stock market. I mean, Illinois has only, you know, just over half of its plan funded.
Illinois is the worst.
Well, Kansas only has 59%. Oklahoma only 61%. Massachusetts only 63%. I mean, that is leaving a gap of billions, maybe trillions out there uncovered. People are saying, you heard Mark Paul, we're going to have to cut who knows what, schools, libraries, fire departments to pay for pensions?
Tom, we've had two of the most severe financial crises that we've ever experienced.
That's
in the
why
last,
we're talking
in
about
the last
this,
10 years. So, so one is this a problem of just public employees gone wild, or is this a problem of some extremes in some places, and then just terrible things happening to the assets accumulated
but,
in the plants?
My question is, who wants to take anything away from a public employee who served well, they filled their duty, and now it's time for the pension? But in a democracy, can you have, you know, the taxpayers sort of scrambling for their retirement and public employees guaranteed and not handsomely in many cases, but nevertheless guaranteed? I mean, that is a tension, isn't it?
It's definitely a tension. Just one other point, and that is that public employees contribute to their plans. And so they have a stake in this as well
that they have paid in.
That they have paid in. And so, I mean, my view is that the retirement system in the private sector is grossly inadequate and needs to be improved. Not that we need, I don't think the step should be to bring the public sector down to the private sector. I think we should try to fix the really scandalous things in the public sector.
But how do we do that? Todd Zawicki, look, if the average public pension around the country is 20,000 something, that hardly sounds. And here's Tony Hayward, fired at BP, going off with $1 million a year, $20,000 something for a public employee who's fulfilled their obligations, paid in. Doesn't sound over the top.
Well, Tom, I think you made the exact right point, which is California is not unique. This is a nationwide train wreck. I mean, we can talk about private pensions and how we'd all like to have better private pensions, that sort of thing. That's not going to save the public pension system. And the data are, I mean, the numbers are the numbers. Within 10 to 20 years, every single pension fund is going to be bankrupt when it comes to public employees. And we know why that is, yes, there are some people who work well and for a long time and do a good job and get paid some, get a pension. And I certainly, and nobody begrudges a fireman or a police officer, a teacher who does dedicated service over the course of their career, having a retirement that is comparable to what the rest of us draw from Social Security. But that doesn't change the numbers.
Why just Social Security? Social Security is seen as a baseline for a lot of people. Everybody tries to build something on top of that.
Sure. Well, let's allow people to have pensions that are comparable to Social Security. But why do we have? But we don't have Social Security payments of $100,000 or $200,000 or $250,000 a year. At some point, we run the difference between what is reasonable for anybody. People paying the Social Security and get paid out. And I don't see anything wrong with allowing pension public employee pensions to have the same sort of thing. But we just can't afford it. And all the wishful thinking in the world about the wishing that private pensions would be more generous doesn't change the fact that we've got a train wreck.
Mark Paul, what do you see coming in terms of public expenditure and this burden of public pensions, Mark? Where are people going to feel it, or are they feeling it already in the rest of the budgets at state, local levels? What will be cut to pay them?
Well, it's a gross exaggeration to say that there's universally a train wreck in public pension systems across the country. There are lots of states lots of different parts of the country. You know, from Florida to New York to Wisconsin to Washington, where their pensions are fully funded,
100% funded, more than 100% funded in New York and Florida.
Right, and in
North Carolina,
states,
Tennessee, Nebraska, Georgia, even Iowa, Vermont, pretty well funded.
Right. And as Alicia says, you know, in many places, the benefits that are paid to public workers are quite in line with what people typically get in the private sector. And there's great variation, even within California, for instance. You know, prison guards in California get to retire at age 50 with 3% of the of a pension of 3% of their final year's salary, which is
per year.
Prison guards in California are paid 40% more than any place else in the country. But California's teachers, for instance, who aren't in Social Security, retire with a pension that basically replaces about 60 to 70% of their, if they work a full career, 60 or 70% of their final income. I mean, that's exactly what a good employer is seeking. That's the goal. So it's just a gross exaggeration to say that this is universally a train wreck.
Not universally, but in the aggregate, this is a huge fiscal problem. Everybody agrees with that, right? I mean, it's a trillion or $2 trillion or $3 trillion.
It's a trillion dollar problem in the places that have underfunded their pensions and have obligations that are too high.
What's going to happen there? What's going to happen when the rubber hits the road on those obligations? What do you fear or anticipate?
Well, I mean, it squeezes out funding for other priorities. It could force tax increases, et cetera. So that's why the places that have these pension problems need to deal with them. But we also, you know, the point that Mike and I try to make in our paper is that you know, the Todd's approach, which is, you know, we've got this deplorable lack of retirement security in the private sector, that the solution to the public system is to throw public workers into the same morass as private workers. What we need to do in this country is to create a universal retirement system that works for all workers, private and public. And there's, you know, you can't have, I don't believe, and this is the point I think that you've been making, Tom, is that you can't have a system in which you have, you know, affluence on one side and squalor on another. That the goal of public policy in America ought to be to put a floor of retirement security under all workers. That's what a good society looks like, and that's what we ought to be trying to do.
Let's bring our callers in here. Des Moines, Iowa. Sam, you are on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And I fully agree with what your last guest just said. I don't understand the resentment of middle-class private workers toward middle-class public workers as the gap between the wealthy and the middle class increases. And rather than private workers resenting public pensions, they need to look at who's reaping the profits. So you've got large corporations don't pay taxes, rather they get tax breaks for moving into cities and states, and Wall Street profits soar. And so I see this as one more example of this top-down divide-and-conquer strategy. And if you get rid of the public pensions and unions, the wages and benefits will go down for everyone, whether they have a union or not. And it may be taboo to bring it up in the current political climate, but I really believe this gets back to an unequal distribution of wealth. So I agree with your guest that the private sector should strive for the public pension model rather than eliminate what makes a middle-class life possible.
Sam, let us pick that up. Todd Zawicki, what do you say to that perspective?
Well, I understand what he's saying, but the
Tony Hayward got fired. $1 million a year pension for life.
I think that's absurd. And if I was a British Petroleum stockholder, I'd be completely outraged.
But he's not alone at the top of that kind of, you know, at the top of that kind of money ladder. And Sam's looking at that. But you hear me saying, let's not grade it all down. Let's grade it all up. Is that possible?
I'm not going to defend Tony Hayward. I'm not going to defend the outrageous salaries and pensions or retirement benefits that are paid to those guys. I think that's completely ridiculous, considering how incompetent those guys were and what the guys on Wall Street made. Having said that, the idea that somebody should be retired at the age of 50 for $100,000 a year and then go back and work full time as a consultant and double dip in basically doing the same sort of job, all the sort of outrages that that we've heard about there's no reason why that should be tolerated. I mean, there's simply no reason why we should tolerate Tony Hayward, and there's no reason why we should tolerate rules where people can game the system to the extent that people can game the system today. It simply makes no sense at all, and we simply cannot afford it anymore. If cities and municipalities, eventually, a lot of them are going to end up having to file bankruptcy, as Vallejo, California has already done, and rework their pensions with respect to the states that can't pay it off. It's a lot messier and a lot more unclear what would happen there. But basically, could we see a foreclosure sale on Sacramento State Capitol in order to pay off the employee pensions? Maybe that's what it takes before people wake up to the problem here.
Alicia, you know, part of the understanding in back in the day, as you described it, was, look, public employees are not so well compensated, and so let's give them at least a solid retirement that'll give them something to aim for, and they're people who want to put in their time and get that retirement. But here I'm looking at what I think are the latest Bureau of Labor Statistics on the average state and local employees out-earning their counterparts in the private economy with an hourly wage of $26.11 versus $19.41 in the private economy. The suggestion there that and if you add in all the benefits, you know, public employees now out-earning $39 to $27 with all benefits, all in. I mean, is it the case anymore that public employees should have a more secure retirement because they don't make what people make in the private sector?
This effort to establish comparability between public and private pay is really hard. But just one point on your numbers is that public sector employees are much better educated than private sector employees.
Because
you've got a lot of teachers and just highly.
So that would drive that wage up.
Yes, and so that explains a lot of the difference. And I'm not sure of all of the difference, but a lot of the difference. I just need to put a couple of balls on the table.
Please.
Since I have the microphone. There are legal issues here. 60% of the states protect all future accruals, so that if you come into a plan and you expect to be able to retire at 55, the government cannot change those provisions as long as you're with that plan.
I mean, in nine states, it's right in the state constitution, never mind even the law.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so this idea that we should do something now. Point of fact, we can't do very much now for current employees. We can change the provisions for new employees, and we can increase contributions from current employees, but it's very hard to change the benefit structure. The benefit structure should be changed. It should have later retirements, and we should move away from this system where everything's based on final earnings. Mm-hmm. That just invites mischief.
Gaming that last year's income.
There's one more final point, and that is that a lot of times when people look at these really big numbers, they're lumping in retiree health care with pensions. And retiree health care is not funded at all. And if you allow somebody to retire at 55 and you guarantee them health care insurance for the rest of their life, that's an enormous expenditure.
That sounds like more problems, not a source of relief. But hold the thought. We have to take a short break here. Alicia Minnell, Todd Zawicki, Mark Paul in California. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Lots of response to this. First online, here's a note from Bo. It says, Bell, California is the most egregious example, but the public sector shouldn't be so out of line with the average pay benefits of the private sector. After all, where does the money come from? Well, of course, he says, the public sector. Then here's Brad saying instead of trying to make all jobs in the U.S. Walmart jobs, we should be pressuring the private sector to compete with better offers for their employees. And finally from Facebook, here's David. It says, let's not have that old knee-jerk anti-public employee union response. The state's agreed to these pensions. Most likely these pensions, where they are totally reasonable, will have to be pared back going forward. But let's do it sanely and calmly. He writes, the recession is not the fault of our public employees. Mark in Clinton, Massachusetts, you're on the air, Mark.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I'm a Mass State employee, and I pay in about 8% of my pay to the pension fund.
Okay.
Don't pay anything into Social Security. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I won't get Social Security in retirement. You know, I just want 2 points here. One, I recently read about Maine wanting to switch from pension to Social Security. Now, Social Security, we're being told, may not be around 20, 30 years from now. And the other point is, Mass does need some reform. I think what it is, the plan should only pay out like the military does. You should only get your base salary, not housing or overtime or any kind of details. You know, kind of like Billy Bulger did a few years ago.
Mark, let me ask you, if I may, what do you think about people, not public employees, looking in and they've got Social Security but no guaranteed pension and very often kind of spotty health, if any health coverage at all? What do you think about the envy from the taxpayers footing these bills, Mark?
You know, I think that's a huge point because a lot of people don't think public employees really work to the same effort that private sector employees do. And they do. I'm here to speak to it that they do. But I signed up with the promise that I pay in a certain amount of money, I will receive a pension down the road. So it was kind of like an agreement or a contract that I entered into.
And so you're expecting it, and a lot of people are. Mark, I appreciate your call. Here's a web comment from Tony saying, as someone married to someone who will depend on their state pension shortly in the worst state in the union, maybe they mean in terms of a fiscal problem here, Illinois,
yeah.
I would point out the obvious. This is paying for something already received, namely 35 years of hard, conscientious work. Okay, fair enough. And yet, people paying for it may not have a pension themselves. Susan in Hingham, Massachusetts. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks, Tom. My point, actually, I'm coming from it from the private sector. And one thing I didn't realize was that Social Security wasn't paid out to the public, and which I think, you know, is an awful thing, too. With us, you know, we've had this option of just our 401ks, and my husband
right.
and I have paid into it the maximum we can for a number of years. And now our fear is that that's also in danger because I've heard that, you know, there are some Democrats and, or I don't think Republicans, but maybe Democrats on the Hill
mm-hmm.
that would like to tax those benefits that we've been saving for 25 years and not at, you know, the retiree rate.
Right. You and a lot of other people paying for a long time and not necessarily with enough in there to make it work. Alicia Minnell, you hear Susan's fear there and the general complaint of people with 401ks. I mean, some are doing fine, but a whole lot with what's happened with the market, with the difficulty of saving in the economy we've had. People are looking at those and are really worried, and now there is talk about taxing 401k withdrawals.
Well, I think 401k withdrawals have always been going to be taxed. In full as income.
Hiking it up, I don't know what it is, but I know there's been some more attention to that lately. I mean, but that system that the majority of the private sector now depends on is leaving a lot of people really dangling when it comes to retirement.
So we have very good data on how much people have in their 401k plans. And for people 55 to 64, those are people approaching retirement. Before the crash, the typical person, it's $78,000. After the crash, it's $56,000. That's not going to buy you a lot of income as you spend 20 years
in
retirement.
You can draw down on that every year for 20 years.
Very little.
Yeah, forget about it.
Just one fact is that 30% of public sector employees don't have Social Security. The other 70%
mm-hmm.
do.
So many do.
Yeah.
Some do not. Brett in Buffalo, New York. Brett, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks so much for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question regarding the guests who are for pension public pension plans. And the question is, what is their solution to the question regarding quality control? So how do you measure the quality of the public employee? And what are their thoughts on more of a meritocracy, more of a merit-based salary raise? And how it is contrasted in what typically takes place in the private sector. So thanks again for your program, and I'll listen to my response off the air. Thanks.
Brett, thanks for calling. Mark Paul, how about in California? You're grappling with a lot out there. Is that part of what you're looking at, sort of grading how pay is established in the public sector in the first place, or what kind of reforms are on the table out there? We heard Governor Schwarzenegger saying, he said there's a train coming here and something has to be done. Like what?
Well, in the public sector, there are merit raises. I mean, I was deputy treasurer of the California. People got raises. We gave raises based on people's performance. People got promotions, et cetera. So that's in most public employment. It varies obviously from place to place.
So you don't see a savings to be had there. How can this be addressed? I mean, a whole lot of states are just up against it here.
In California, the governor Schwarzenegger is attempting to negotiate contracts with state labor unions, and actually succeeded in six cases in establishing a lower second tier pension for new hires, which, if it's sustained, will provide long term relief. But this is a road California has gone down before. We faced the same sort of issues back in the 1990s when California went through its long recession and restructuring, mm-hmm. and adopted a two tier pension system. And as soon as the two tier systems tend to be unstable, you have two workers side by side, each earning a different pension level, and that creates immediate demand generally in negotiations to equalize those pensions.
Though people are talking about this all over. Fort Worth, Texas, I see just in the last day or two, they're talking there about a two tiers because they've got such a big budget gap. They're trying to figure out some way of addressing this. What's your idea, Mark?
Well, we in our paper propose, the one of the ways to dealing with the pension envy system is to go to a hybrid kind of plan that many private sector employers have adopted, called it's called a cash balance plan, that's basically combines elements of both a defined of the 401k plan, and the employer makes a defined contribution to a worker, but has the element of investment guarantee that the employer then guarantees a particular rate of return on the plan, so that workers are not like in the 401k system, exposed to the ups and downs of the market as they approach retirement. And that kind of system, which the hybrids have been adopted in places like Netherlands, gives the opportunity perhaps to have a system that in which both private and public employees have a similar sort of experience, and to close this gap between the security enjoyed by a lot of public workers and the insecurity that we've inflicted on our private workers.
Let's go to Dave in Des Moines, Iowa. Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, you're talking about tearing down. I always factor in the back factor. The average Teamster dies within 5 years of retirement. Hoffa figured that out a long time ago. I'm a Teamster. I'm a Public Works employee.
Okay.
I got to shovel asphalt today. My back's going to gonna hurt. It's statistically proven that we get hurt a lot more. Why are you trying to tear down us? Why don't you stop spending on wars that are useless, or rein in the banks, or do the right thing and bring everybody else's wages up? A living wage at this point is about $19 to have any quality of life. So you're saying, well, you're gonna pick us apart because what? Because we worked 25 years shoveling asphalt, laying cement, taking care of you when it floods, doing this. That's a little disingenuous, That's like when I was in the service and I got out and everybody's like, well, too bad, you're out now. We're not going to help you. I mean, come on, man. It's the greed. It's the wars. It's the stuff that's hurting our country. It's not the public works employees. We're out here busting our butt for you guys.
Dave, we got that perspective loud and clear. Todd Zawicki, what do you say to that? There Dave is shoveling asphalt on a hot day in Iowa and going to be doing it for years, and he says, look, let's look around. Don't try and, fix everything on the backs of public employees who are doing the work.
Sure, and there's a lot of people who are going to be doing that working in the private sector as well, and they're going to be doing it for probably a lot longer than 25 years. And, we keep coming back to the point, well, they paid into it, don't they get it out? But But that's not how the rest of the world works. You know, we've seen bankruptcy cases. Certainly, the airline bankruptcies are a good example of people who paid into private pensions, and when they discovered that they've made promises they couldn't keep, people had their pensions adjusted. Everybody knows you don't have a right to Social Security, and that they could change your benefits with respect to Social Security. Professor Minnell notes exactly what the problem here is that you can't, in a lot of states, you simply can't change the pensions because they've wired it into the state constitution. That's pure politics. That is politics. That is to have a constitutional right to a pension that has to be paid out, even if it means closing schools, even if it means laying off other public employees, and even if it means, you know, just imposing a crushing burden of taxation on the private sector. I just don't think that's a realistic way to run the world.
So what's going to happen here, in your view? What will happen then? I mean, there it is in those 9 constitutions and law in many more states. So the guarantee's there. The red ink is there. What happens?
Well, it seems like at this point, when it comes to cities, as I mentioned, they can file bankruptcy under Chapter 9. And a lot of those are going to end up doing that so that even city workers, municipal workers, don't have the same sort of security that state workers have. It seems like there's really only, when it comes to the states, there's really only 2 possible options here. Number one is the federal government bails them out. Which means the rest of us bail out these irresponsible states. That's certainly plausible. Number two, as far as I can tell, is that basically if California can't pay bills, you should think of California as Argentina. They simply default on their bills, and because of the way the Constitution operates, most bondholders, for instance, would not be allowed to even sue them. If in states that have these public employee pensions written into the state constitution, I am completely serious when I say that they may very well have the right to be able to seize state assets and sell buildings at foreclosure sales.
Who's they? Who would seize those? Bondholders or Teamsters or who?
Bondholders could not because they don't have this preferential treatment, but that public employee workers who have a state constitutional right presumably have the right to sue the state in a way that nobody else does. The last default we saw by a state, as far as I know, was 1934 during the Great Depression when Arkansas defaulted. And before that, it was back in the 1840s. We haven't seen this scenario very often, but I don't see how we can avoid it in some of these states, especially these states where, for political reasons, they've guaranteed pensions beyond any other creditor of the state. You know, somebody who sold goods, somebody who provides services for the state don't have the same kind of guarantee that somebody who's worked there does.
Mark Paul, are you going to have public employees storming the toll booths in California to get those coins to pay their pensions?
Well, I think it's quite that George Mason is probably rolling over in his grave to hear a professor of law at the institution named after him imply that the contracts that public employees have with their employer, you know, shouldn't be honored. In most states, it's not a constitutional protection for the public pensions. In fact, it's, as in California, a contract law, and generally, you know, that I thought conservatives believed in honoring contracts. But the problems are not nearly as large as Todd says. I mean, these are things that we need to approach as a matter of policy, you know, reasonably, and these kind of blanket. I mean, California, our bondholders, our public employees in California don't have a constitutional protection, but the bondholders do, and there's no danger that the bondholders in California are not going to be paid. These are problems that need to be worked out as public policy, but California is nowhere close to being in Argentina.
Elise Minnell, these are real tensions in a democracy, and by all projections, they're likely to get worse at the moment. How do we reset a course here to get out of this tension between taxpayer and public employee? You know, some people really just worried like crazy over how they're going to eat in retirement, and others guaranteed. How do we move beyond this?
Can I ask in two stages? In terms of the public employees, there's no silver bullet in the short run. The best you can do is redesign for new employees and make sure that you have sensible retirement ages and get away from these final earnings plans. We need to have the stock market recover, and we need to have our economy recover. And as soon as that happens, get back on this schedule of regular funding that they were on until the financial collapse. So this is not a reckless component of our economy. They really got hit hard. So that's a messy solution, but it's
but
the only way to go.
But everybody got hit hard, not just pension funds.
Not just
right?
pensions. Anybody with money got any. And the poor public pension funds, the reason they got hit so hard is they'd actually taken some effort to build up reserves to pay the benefits.
But 401ks got hit hard, too, and there's nobody guaranteeing those
funds. So in the public pension system, mm-hmm. it's really fixing it. And then the area that can be cut that doesn't have a constitutional profession protection is these health insurance payments by the government. And they are extremely expensive. And in Massachusetts, the report recommended prorating them. So if you've been there for 30 years, you get a lot of towards your contribution.
So that's the answer? Cut health benefits for public employees?
Cut public sector contributions to public employees. Prorate it. If you're only there for 10 years, you get little. If you're there for 30 years, you get much. So there's flexibility there. In terms of the private sector, our private sector retirement system is too small. Social Security is going to provide less. These balances are $56,000. We need a new tier of retirement income for private sector employees.
Well, hold on to your hats, fellow citizens. We are going into some kind of era of pressures all the way around. Let's hope for those bounce backs Alicia Monell hopes for on many fronts, and maybe they'll ease the pressure a bit. Alicia Monell, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Todd Zawicki at George Mason University School of Law, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Mark Paul in Sacramento, California with the New America Foundation. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.